So imagine you're laying down the steel tracks for a high-speed bullet train.
Okay.
You're working as fast as you can, hammering in the spikes, but the train is already roaring right behind you at like 300 miles an hour.
That's a terrifying image.
Right. You can literally feel the heat of the engine on your back. And the tracks you're laying are totally cutting edge, but the ground underneath is sinking. The steel shipments have just mysteriously stopped. And oh, yeah, half your crew just had their identity stolen.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's a profound structural crisis, honestly. We are engineering the future at this unprecedented velocity, but the underlying supply chains and the security protocols that are meant to stabilize that future, they're just buckling under the weight.
Exactly. And that is the exact paradox we're exploring in today's deep dive. So,
Yeah.
welcome. Today is Sunday, April 19th, 2026. And our source stack today is this massive, really comprehensive tech bulletin called Techonite.
It's a gold mine of information, yeah.
It really is. And our mission today is to synthesize six major stories from exactly the same day, all dropped in a 24-hour window, to give you, the listener, a perfectly curated kind of aha overview of this exact moment in time.
Right, a snapshot.
Yeah. We're going to look at where technology is making these huge leaps forward, where it's just fundamentally breaking, and why any of this actually matters to you.
And it's a remarkable stack of sources, really. I mean, we're looking at a sudden drought of computer chips, breakthroughs in quantum computing that legitimately threaten global security, a massive crypto heist.
Oh, the crypto heist is wild.
Oh, totally. Plus, a hostage situation in a hospital database, a huge leak from a furious gaming giant, and a reality check on self-driving taxis.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's unpack this by starting with the physical hardware that runs literally all of it.
Huh.
Because the engine of progress is quite literally running out of raw materials right now.
Yeah, the CPU shortage.
Right. We are looking at a severe shortage of computer processors. The bulletin notes that Intel and AMD have just announced a 10 to 15% price hike across all their CPU lines.
Which is significant. I mean, that price hike is certainly going to hit consumers, but the delivery timeline, that's the actual crisis here.
Right.
Standard delivery times from major manufacturers have jumped from a normal 2 weeks to an agonizing 6 months.
Okay, I have to stop you right there. Because I'm looking at this and thinking about the massive supply chain overhauls we went through back in, what, 2021?
Right, yeah.
Didn't the industry spend billions to make sure this wouldn't happen again? Like, why are we suddenly waiting half a year for a standard processor? It's like trying to buy a ticket to the most popular concert of the year, but some billionaire just walked up and bought out the entire stadium.
That is actually a perfect analogy because the nature of the demand fundamentally changed. This isn't a shipping logistics issue, like boats stuck in a canal. This is a foundry bottleneck issue. The real culprit here is the insatiable demand of AI companies. They're just completely hoarding CPU production capacity at the manufacturing level.
Wait, let me challenge that though, because we hear constantly, artificial intelligence models are trained on GPUs, graphics processing units, not standard CPUs.
Right.
So why is the AI boom cratering the CPU market?
It's a really common misconception that AI only needs GPUs. I mean, yes, the actual training of the model relies on GPUs, but the surrounding infrastructure,
It's like the servers and stuff.
exactly, the massive data ingestion servers, the network orchestration, the systems that actually feed the data into those GPUs, all of that relies heavily on top-tier
Oh,
CPUs.
yeah.
And further, both of those chips are made using the exact same finite resource, right? Silicon wafers at top-tier foundries like TSMC. AI companies just have massive capital, so they're buying out all the foundry time.
Which basically leaves everyday consumer tech companies completely boxed out.
Correct. The bulletin actually highlights this stark contrast between the memory market and the CPU market.
Okay, how so?
Well, with memory like your RAM, the dynamic is currently, high price but still supplying. If Dell or HP wants memory, they pay a huge premium, but they get the parts.
Right, they can still build a laptop.
Yeah. But the CPU market has entered this nightmare high price, no stock paradigm. The volume of processors required to just build your next laptop simply isn't leaving the factory.
So classical computing is just completely bottlenecked by physical manufacturing limits and basically this AI gold rush,
Exactly.
which creates a really fascinating bridge to the next paradigm in our stack. Because there's computing that attempts to bypass these physical limits entirely. Let's look at quantum.
Oh, this is where it gets wild. This is where the underlying physics shifts from classical mechanics to something deeply, deeply unintuitive.
The numbers in this report are just staggering. We are looking at quantum systems that are like 13,000 times faster than the best supercomputers currently on Earth.
It's hard to even wrap your head around.
It really is. IBM just announced their Nighthawk system is aiming for quantum advantage by late 2026. And at the same time, Google's new Willow chip has apparently solved this massive hurdle called exponential error correction.
Right.
So, okay, let's unpack this. I hear the term quantum advantage thrown around all the time, but what does that actually mean for the industry?
So what's fascinating here is quantum advantage is this precise threshold. It's the point where a quantum computer can solve a complex, real-world problem, not just the theoretical math puzzle, but a practical application, and do it significantly faster or cheaper than any classical supercomputer ever could.
Okay, like what kind of problem?
Well, the source mentions BMW and Airbus. They're already using these early systems to optimize the chemical reactions in fuel cells.
That's incredible. But I want to understand the how here. Because we always hear, you know, classical bits are just ones and zeros, while quantum bit qubits can be both at the same time.
Yes, superposition.
Right.
Yeah.
But how does that physical mechanism actually translate to being 13,000 times faster?
Okay, think of it like navigating a massive, incredibly complex maze.
Okay, I'm with you.
A classical computer, even a really fast one, solves the maze by running down one path. If it hits a dead end, it backs up and tries the next path. It runs them sequentially.
One by one.
Exactly. A quantum computer, because of that ability for qubits to exist in multiple states simultaneously, essentially floods the entire maze with water.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it explores every single possible path at the exact same time to find the exit instantly.
That makes so much sense. But the bulletin also notes that these qubits are notoriously fragile, right? Like a slight temperature change or a stray microwave can scramble all the data.
Totally. They're incredibly delicate.
So how does Google's Willow chip solve that?
Through exponential error correction. Historically, if you added more physical qubits to a system to make it more powerful, you'd inadvertently just create more noise and more errors.
Like turning up the volume on static.
Perfect way to put it. Google's breakthrough involves taking a large cluster of those noisy, unstable physical qubits and using a complex algorithm to bind them together into a single, stable, logical qubit.
Okay.
They've proven that they can detect and correct the physical errors faster than the environment can even cause them.
Which means we are finally moving from unstable prototypes to functional, world-changing machines.
Yes. But, and this is a huge but,
yeah, our sources highlight a deeply concerning joint warning from Google and a startup called Oratomic. They point out that this exact same computing power is a direct threat to the entire foundation of internet security.
Yeah, this is the dark side of quantum advantage. The entire internet, I mean, your banking app, secure messaging, the global financial system, it all relies on cryptographic protocols like RSA and ECC.
And to ground that for you listening, the way RSA works is essentially relying on a mathematical blind spot.
Right.
It takes two massive prime numbers and multiplies them together to create a public key. A classical computer can do that multiplication in like a microsecond. But if you give a classical computer the final massive number and ask it to figure out which two original prime numbers created it, it has to guess sequentially.
One by one, which would take millions of years to crack.
Right. But a quantum computer doesn't guess sequentially.
No, using something called Shor's algorithm, it can find those prime factors almost immediately. What takes a classical supercomputer a million years could take a stable quantum computer an afternoon.
I want you to really consider the weight of that. The lock on every single digital door you interact with is about to become completely obsolete.
It is absolutely a ticking clock. And NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, is scrambling right now to standardize post-quantum cryptography.
Wow.
We have to essentially swap out the locks on the entire digital infrastructure of the planet while the building is still occupied and running.
It's a terrifying prospect. But, you know, here's the bitter irony of our tech landscape today. We don't even need a quantum lockpick to drain a vault because our current digital doors are already being left wide open.
Sadly true.
Let's look at the decentralized finance space. On Saturday, April 18th, the crypto world just watched the Kelp DAO hack unfold in real time.
It's the largest DeFi theft of 2026 so far. $293 million just evaporated.
And the duration of the attack is what gets me. 46 minutes from start to finish.
That's it.
The attacker exploited a vulnerability in something called a layer zero cross-chain bridge. For those not deep in Web3, What exactly is the mechanism of a cross-chain bridge, and like, how do you forge nearly $300 million?
So blockchains, by design, are isolated networks. Bitcoin doesn't naturally talk to Ethereum. A cross-chain bridge solves this. The standard mechanism is you lock up your real asset on chain A in a smart contract.
Yeah, right.
The bridge sees that, and then it mints or creates an equivalent representative token on chain B.
Like an IOU.
Exactly. What happened here is a fatal flaw in the smart contract logic. The attacker sent manipulated code that basically tricked the bridge into thinking they had deposited massive assets on the origin chain.
So the bridge's automated system just obediently minted, what, 116,500 years tokens on the other side?
Yeah, out of thin air.
That's roughly 18% of the entire circulating supply, created with zero financial backing. It's like someone forged fake casino chips, walked to a different cashier, in this case the AVAV lending protocol, and cashed out.
Yeah, and because smart contracts execute automatically once the exploit was triggered, there was absolutely no human oversight to pause the transaction.
Right. They handed over the counterfeit tokens as collateral and walked away with $250 million in legitimate Ethereum before the automated systems even realized the collateral was worthless.
Before the casino boss even checked the security cameras.
Exactly. And it caused Olav's native token to plummet 14% almost instantly.
It perfectly illustrates the fragility of composability in Web3.
Yeah.
You can have incredibly secure individual blockchains, but the bridges connecting them are highly complex pieces of custom code. And complexity always breeds vulnerability.
Yeah. And it isn't just crypto speculators suffering from these vulnerabilities. Let's move from digital tokens to something deeply personal. Your medical records.
This one is rough.
It is. The bulletin details a devastating cyber attack on the Cookeville Regional Medical Center, CRMC, down in Tennessee.
Yeah, they were targeted by the Rosita ransomware gang.
And the sheer volume of data is staggering. 500 gigabytes of highly sensitive information was exfiltrated. We're talking social security numbers, government IDs, financial routing numbers, and incredibly intimate medical histories.
Yeah.
The hackers demanded a ransom of 10 Bitcoin, which is around $1.15 million right now. But here's the detail I absolutely have to challenge. The source clearly states this intrusion happened in July 2025.
Yeah.
Yet they're only notifying the nearly 338,000 victims now in April 2026. How on earth does a healthcare institution hide a breach of that magnitude for 10 months?
Well, the standard industry defense is that forensic investigations take time. Hospitals operate on deeply fractured legacy IT systems.
Okay, but still.
When an exfiltration happens, they basically have to comb through server logs line by line to determine exactly whose files were in that 500 gigabyte payload so they don't notify the wrong people.
I'm sorry, I'm not buying that. 10 months isn't a forensic investigation.
Yeah.
That feels like a deliberate delay to manage a PR nightmare.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have over 300,000 people who have had their medical histories floating around dark web marketplaces for almost a year without even knowing they needed to freeze their credit.
Yeah.
Are there no regulatory penalties for this kind of opacity?
You're definitely right to be skeptical. Regulatory bodies are beginning to crack down, but the legal loopholes regarding discovery of scope are vast. The healthcare sector is just facing a systemic crisis of transparency and security right now.
Yeah.
Look at the Change Healthcare breach last year. That affected 100 million Americans, one in three people in the country. It crippled billing systems so severely that independent clinics almost went bankrupt. Healthcare networks are highly lucrative targets because the data is permanent. You can change a stolen credit card number. You cannot change your medical history.
Wow. So what is the mechanical fix here? How do we stop legacy hospital networks from just bleeding our data?
It requires a fundamental shift to a zero-trust architecture. Historically, hospital networks were like castles, hard on the outside, soft on the inside. Once a hacker got past the firewall, they could move laterally to any database.
Just wander the halls.
Exactly. Zero trust means every single interaction, even from a nurse's terminal that's already inside the building, must be continuously authenticated with multi-factor authentication. Furthermore, they have to strictly implement the 3-2-1 backup rule.
Right, which is three copies of your data on two different media types with one copy stored completely offline.
Precisely. Ransomware gangs encrypt your primary data and demand payment for the decryption key. But if you have a fully air-gapped offline backup from the day before the attack, you don't have to pay the ransom. You just wipe the servers and restore the data.
But that requires an IT budget that a lot of regional medical centers simply do not have.
Very true.
Let's zoom out for a second. Because if there's a common thread running through this bulletin, it's the sheer loss of control.
Mm.
The crypto developers lost control of their bridge. The hospital lost control of its data. And as we move to our next story, even the most secretive titans of the entertainment industry are losing control of their narratives.
Oh, you're talking about the Nintendo leak.
It's a massive exposure.
Yeah.
The bulletin details a comprehensive leak of Nintendo's hardware and software plans for the highly anticipated Switch 2 console.
The internet is losing its mind over this.
Totally. The lineup slated for summer and fall 2026 is unprecedented. We're looking at Metroid 6, a new Wario Land, a classic-style Star Fox, Fire Emblem, Fortune's Wii, Splatoon Raiders, and the one that has the entire internet talking.
A full ground-up remake of The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, targeted for the 2026 holidays.
Oh, I can't wait. Not only that, we have the hardware specifications. The Switch 2 will reportedly feature four times the processing power when docked and twice the power in handheld mode compared to the original.
And crucially for gamers, it's fully backwards compatible.
Right. The bulletin also casually mentions that Pokemon Pokopia, which launched earlier this year, has officially become the highest-rated Pokemon game in franchise history.
Which is awesome. But from an industry mechanics perspective, what's fascinating here isn't just the games, but Nintendo's furious reaction.
Oh, they are mad.
They are aggressively pursuing legal action to hunt down the leakers. But honestly, it just highlights the modern reality of global manufacturing. To launch a console by the holidays, you have to spin up production facilities, coordinate with third-party software developers, print marketing materials, arrange global shipping logistics.
Right. You're relying on thousands of different human nodes in the supply chain.
Exactly. Nintendo is famous for its culture of secrecy, but this proves that in the information age, it is mechanically impossible to plug every hole. If a secret requires a massive supply chain to execute, it will eventually end up on a forum.
Yeah. Control is an illusion when the network gets too big.
Mm.
Which brings us perfectly to our final piece of the bulletin. We are moving from virtual worlds to physical streets. Tesla has just begun pushing its spring update 2026.
Yeah, the autonomous vehicle race is entering a critical new phase.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Tesla is rolling out advanced, full self-driving FSD features to existing customer Model 3 and Model Y vehicles. Crucially, these are the robo-taxi-inspired features that were previously heavily restricted to their specific pilot program in Austin, Texas.
Right. To understand the significance of this update, we have to look at the three big transport networks currently fighting for dominance: Tesla, Waymo, and Uber. They are approaching a multi-billion dollar market with vastly different philosophies.
The bulletin actually does a great job contrasting Tesla and Waymo. Tesla's primary advantage is hardware distribution. They're utilizing their existing massive fleet of consumer cars and using over-the-air software updates to turn them into an autonomous network.
Mm-hmm.
Waymo, meanwhile, builds highly specialized vehicles, heavily outfitted with LiDAR, and operates in over 12 specific geofenced cities, whereas Tesla's dedicated robo-taxi pilot is currently limited to just Austin.
But the core differentiator, and really the point of most friction, is how they handle the limitations of the AI, because neither of these systems is completely infallible yet. They both rely on remote human operators who can digitally step in and assist the vehicle when the software encounters a bizarre edge case.
An edge case being something like a poorly drawn construction sign or a pedestrian in a heavy costume acting erratically, something the AI hasn't been trained on.
Right, exactly. Tesla has made a very public point of utilizing U.S.-based remote operators, arguing that the localized oversight guarantees a higher standard of safety and communication. Waymo, conversely, has integrated remote operators based in the Philippines.
Which the source notes has drawn some regulatory scrutiny.
Yeah, it fundamentally comes down to the mechanics of latency and labor economics. The sources point out Waymo is optimizing for cost efficiency by utilizing international labor. The regulatory criticism revolves around the latency of a video feed crossing the Pacific Ocean to an operator who is suddenly tasked with making a split-second safety decision for a 2-ton vehicle navigating an intersection in Arizona.
Right, and both companies strongly defend their respective safety records. But I have to push back on the broader timeline here. We have to look at the broken promises.
Fair point.
Elon Musk stated explicitly that by the end of 2025, Tesla would have 500 dedicated robo-taxis operating in Austin, and that they would be offering fully unsupervised rides to the public. Well, we're well into 2026.
Yeah.
The Austin pilot still mandates human safety drivers physically sitting behind the wheel alongside those remote operators.
Mm.
Are we actually approaching a driverless future, or is this just masterful software marketing designed to sell more cars?
It is the brutal reality of the final 5%.
What do you mean?
The ultimate goal for the entire industry is level 5 autonomy, right? A vehicle without a steering wheel where human intervention is zero. Getting a car to drive perfectly in 95% of normal conditions is computationally straightforward. The final 5%, the chaotic, unpredictable nature of human infrastructure and weather, is exponentially more difficult to solve.
That makes sense.
The software is making undeniable progress, but we're realizing that true autonomy still requires a massive safety net of human oversight, whether that human is sitting in the driver's seat or sitting at a desk 1,000 miles away.
Wow. So we have covered a massive amount of ground today. What does this snapshot of April 19, 2026 mean for you? You're living in a moment where AI is fundamentally restructuring the global supply of computer chips, making your next laptop harder to acquire.
Yep.
You are watching quantum mechanics bend reality to solve impossible problems while simultaneously threatening the cryptography that guards your life savings. We've seen how a single code vulnerability can vaporize hundreds of millions of dollars in 46 minutes and how a hospital's legacy database can be held hostage for months.
It's intense.
Yet in the midst of all this structural vulnerability, we are on the verge of exploring a breathtaking new Zelda game and watching the cars outside our windows slowly learn how to see the world.
It is a profound duality, but I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over regarding the mechanics we discussed today.
Okay, let's hear it.
We talked about the terrifying potential of quantum computers breaking RSA encryption. We also discussed how incredibly fragile our current crypto bridges and hospital databases already are against basic classical cyber attacks. So imagine what happens in a few short years when the first rogue state-sponsored quantum computer comes online and aims its processing power not at a secure military vault, but at a vulnerable legacy hospital database or a poorly coded cross-chain bridge.
Oh, man.
We are furiously building the ultimate locks to secure our future, but we are simultaneously building the ultimate lockpick. The pivotal question of our generation is, which one will we deploy first?
Wow. It brings us right back to those train tracks.
Yeah.
The bullet train is accelerating, and we have absolutely no choice but to keep laying the steel. We just have to hope we can tighten the bolts before the engine arrives. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the architecture of our rapidly changing world. Stay curious, keep questioning the mechanics of the tech around you, and we will see you next time.